Chair, and this is a session on Earth Study, on global warming and ozone depletion, on what God is saying to us through these natural phenomena. And I'll be talking about these phenomena as part of a larger problem of the destruction of the physical, chemical, biological basis for human life, and the meaning of that for us, and talking about some of the things we can do about it. Well, the Earth clearly is saying something to us. And it's saying something to us through all kinds of phenomena. The reason I pick out global warming and ozone depletion from a gamut of problems, the toxic poisoning of our earth and of the water and of the air, the degradation of our groundwater, the degradation of our lakes and oceans and rivers, the destruction of our forests, the depletion of the natural species by the destruction of the tropical forests, the waste disposal, the acid rain which destroys our forests and destroys life in many of our water systems. All of these issues are a result of what we are doing, what we are producing, and the way we're producing, and the extent to which we're producing, and the extent to which the very production, I forgot to mention the depletion of our natural resources, the depletion of minerals and of oil, particularly oil and gas, coal we have quite a bit of, but all these things are saying something to us about what we are as a Western industrial civilization. And I guess that's what makes me wonder what we are up to and what the future will be. And so far as I can see, the future is very precarious for our kids and for our grandkids. The situation will be quite different. Now, global warming and ozone are realities that affect everybody, the whole universe. And the whole universe affects them. It's nothing that we can do individually as nations. We cannot solve the problem individually. The burning of tropical forests and alone puts up enough carbon dioxide to cause all kinds of problems for the future, so that we are not in control. Now, with some of the problems, at least we can control our own backyards. We can do something about waste. We can do something about the pesticides. We can do something about the nitrogen fertilizers that cause all kinds of health problems. But about global warming and about ozone depletion, we cannot do a great deal alone. Let me begin by talking about global warming. And I just present a few facts that, so-called facts, all of these presentations naturally are hinging on what people say. And what I've been doing is reading general books on the issues and then specialist books on the issues. And I haven't done anything since September except do this. Over 160,000 years, between the temperature and the amount of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. The amount of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere varies. As you can see, on the side it's the parts per million. The temperature is on the left. And the correlations, the graph didn't pick up the variation in color, but you can see the lines are practically almost exactly with each other. So that for 160,000 years, this correlation has existed. What they do is to drill down in the Arctic ice, and they find the captured molecules of air, and they measure the amount of carbon dioxide in the air. And that way they tell that they can drill down in sedimentation, places where there's very heavy sedimentation, and find the pollen that's associated with certain climate, with certain plants that grow in certain climates, and then they can estimate what the climate must be like. Naturally, it depends upon the adequacy of their research. The bottom diagram shows a correlation over the last, 1860 to 130 years. And in that diagram, you can see the temperature rising not a great deal from minus 6 to, plus 2. It, most people say the temperature has risen in the last century about half a degree. But again, the correlation, what I'm interested in here for you to think about is the correlation between the amount of carbon dioxide, which the straight line represents, going from 290 parts per million to about 350 parts per million, 345 is what they usually use. That there is an increase in the carbon dioxide. Most people would say there's about a 30% increase in carbon dioxide over this period. So that if there is a correlation between the amount of carbon dioxide in the air and the temperature, we can expect with the rising amount of carbon dioxide that there will be some increase in the temperature. This shows projections of what will happen on the basis of the increase in the greenhouse gases. The greenhouse gases collect up about 20 miles and permit the sunlight to come through, and the infrared rays that are given off the heat waves are absorbed by these gases. The gases are not only carbon dioxide. I use carbon dioxide because it's the gas that we've had for so long that's associated, for example, on Venus where it's 800 degrees, the carbon dioxide is much more extensive. On Mars where it's cold, there's no carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. So the steep curve shows what could happen if we continue to increase our use of resources and give off the carbon emissions at a faster rate. Last year, I think the rate was about 3.6%. And I have another graph that will show a little bit more accurately. But they say if we should continue with that kind of growth, the temperature might rise as high as 30 degrees. It was an average temperature. It was 122 in Phoenix not long ago. That'd be 150. But somewhere between 5 and 30 degrees will be the rise in the temperature. Of course, these are all estimates, and the 5 to 30 you can see. If we use resources, chiefly fossil fuels, but also the burning of biomass, about the way we are now, the middle graph is the graph. And that suggests that we'll have somewhere between 5 and 15 degrees. And they say here that if we had 15 degrees, it's almost the same as having 30 degrees, which they call an inferno. So between 5 and 15 degrees. No one knows, the author says, if the human sphere could survive the stress of even a rise of 5 degrees, but 15 degrees would probably be just as devastating as 30. And the bottom line is if we cut back, let me hasten to show you. I show you different ones because it at least suggests that I haven't just picked out one set of figures. This shows on the left the projected concentration. If we have, it seems there they start with about 330, 40. Growth of use of fossil fuels and of biomass burning 1%, 2%, 3%, 4%. Of course, it's not carried out, but it shows you that the timetable is very, very frightening. Have triple, you got up there toward 1200, you'd have triple or 2.5 times at least the number, the amount of carbon dioxide in the air. So that we've been growing between 3 and 4%, you can see this, how those curves are. And if we had negative growth, you can see it would stay about the same. One of the reasons that the negative growth would stay about the same in terms of temperature is that even without any growth, we have all the carbon dioxide and the chlorofluorocarbons, which is the second largest greenhouse gas has, that stay in the atmosphere, some say 100 years, some say one of the chlorofluorocarbons 70 years, one is estimated 130 years, some say the carbon dioxide stays more than 100 years, so that, and it takes chlorofluorocarbons, they say, from 7 to 15 years to get up there. So all the chlorofluorocarbons that we've been using, the effect of them is not up there yet, and the same with the carbon dioxide. It isn't until it gets up there, and once it gets up there, it stays for a long time. So that the problem is, what we're going to do with these greenhouse gases. Well, can everybody see all right? That's a little bit. This shows you where the carbon emissions from fossil fuel, that is from coal, iron, oil, and gas, natural gas, come from. And you can see that the United States and the USSR are the greatest sources of carbon emissions. Our average in the United States is 5 tons a person. You'd see the world average at 108. If we add the biomass, we get the world average up to about 1.3. The total carbon emissions, what do we got here? About 5 billion, 600 million. And the biomass emissions are about 1,600,000,000, 600,000,000, 700,000,000. So the biomass emissions are a significant part of the problem. Now, the goals that are set by some people for reduction of these carbon emissions are suggested here. This is in State of the World, 1989, I think it's the 1989 edition. But the goals are to reduce our carbon emissions until from 5 we go down by 2010 to 2. So if we're reducing, that's about 60%, isn't it? About 60%. That means we stop using 60% of the coal, oil, and gas that we're using. And in our society, which is built upon energy, use of energy, that's a fairly significant reduction in the amount. We'll talk a little about how we might arrive at that reduction, but I show you this largely to indicate where the suggestions for changes are. I feel we probably ought to, in the North America, the developed nation, we probably ought to go down 80%. So that it would allow the developing nations to go up. And one of the problems is that they're so underdeveloped that if they begin to develop economically, there's no way for them really to develop economically, or it seems that almost whatever they do, they will have to increase their carbon emissions. There's some possibilities, of course, of our simply, in one way or another, trying to force them into what you'd call sustainable development. But it's very hard politically and psychologically to say they should not develop when they're, when you can see the tons per capita that they're using are much less than we're using. At any rate, this paints a little picture for you of what is happening. Now, what's the result of the global warming? One of the results, this is not a good, it's the only one I have, it's not easily read, but it, what it says is that there are three or four different groups that have estimated what the effect of the sea level rise by 2100 will be. And the National Academy of Sciences did two studies, and in one you can see they said the total effect would be about 2 feet, 70 centimeters is about 2 feet. Around 2 feet. And the Environmental Protection Agency, our own EPA, said it would be somewhere between, 1.5 feet and 345 centimeters. That's about 3.5 meters. That's three and a half meters. That's about 10, what, meter? That's about 10 feet. So from 1.5 to 10 feet. Nobody knows, of course, and there are all kinds of different predictions about whether the sea level will rise or whether the sea will absorb more carbon dioxide as it gets warmer. And there are some predictions even are that we'll bring about the ice age by virtue of the warming, which will cause the pole to be much cooler than the equator will warm more, and the flow of gases, of clouds and moisture from one place to the other, will carry the moisture to the poles and be deposited as snow and ice, and it'll really cause glaciers and more cooling eventually. But almost everybody I've read, it seems to think we are in the period of global warming. A little bit depends on your politics, what you read, what you hear. And so you can't be sure what you're getting. There's a great one of the books on global warming is by Stephen Snyder. It's called Global Warming. And at the end he says, well, I was in this congressional hearing and somebody said, well, what's the chance that you're wrong? He said, well, 50% maybe I'm wrong about all this stuff. But he said, there's 50% chance I'm right. And it's kind of one of those situations where the evidence seems to point in a certain direction. And here I've simply have the graph of carbon dioxide and of methane. Methane is another gas that's global warming, and it shows the increase of methane. We can't solve the problem simply by control of carbon, because we have four gases that are said to be important in global warming in varying proportions, and carbon dioxide is at least 50% in every place I've seen, some as high as 57%, and the chlorofluorocarbons are about 25%, and the methane somewhere around 12 to 18%, got two different, and nitrous oxide, the fourth gas, is about 6%. Both of the estimates I have figures on show 6%. So we've got some other gases that are involved in this global warming. This indicates the release from tropical deforestation. Unfortunately, the figures I've seen for tropical deforestation don't go beyond 1980, so that even in a very much later estimate, the figures on tropical deforestation stop in 1980. But you can see, I don't know how long that tropical deforestation can go on. I don't know how, I mean, if you take one place that hits me strong is Costa Rica. It only has 17% of its forest left. And many of the countries have been reduced. Someone said we've lost a fifth of our forests, a fifth of our topsoil and a fifth of our forests in the world already. But you can see why Brazil is a problem. 20% of the carbon emissions. The problem, of course, or one of the issues with tropical deforestation or destruction is that while the tropical trees don't seem to take as much of the carbon dioxide out of the air by their growth, they take carbon dioxide. So you not only spew out the carbon dioxide, but you remove a source of using carbon dioxide in photosynthesis. So that's why many people and all kinds of states and countries are planting millions and millions and millions of trees, partly because for erosion problems, partly because they need the trees for fuel wood in many of these countries, and the lack of fuel wood in the third world, I suppose there's a billion people who do not have enough wood to cook with in other countries. Well, this is just interesting because it gives you an idea of the use of the fossil fuels in the different parts of the world, and the extent to which oil is still a big, big part of the use of fossil fuels. Interesting, China, everybody says China's got the coal, and it's obvious that that's, and that's of course the worst, because the figures that I've seen indicate that coal gives off about 20 hundredths of a pound of carbon for every 100 million BTUs. Wood, interestingly, 18 hundredths. Oil, 16 hundredths. And gas, 10 hundredths. So that you get twice as much, for a million BTUs, you get twice as much carbon if you use coal as if you use gas. And besides coal, of course, let's lose so much sulfur and nitrogen, which is the problem with acid rain. Well, what can we do? This is just an interesting thing for some of you. It takes two states. It takes the per capita energy consumption. One of the biggest sources of our use of fossil fuels for the production of energy, and that is electricity. This shows energy consumption in California and Texas. And the increase in energy consumption over the period in Texas and the decrease in California. And the explanation is that California set mandatory building and appliance efficiency standards, reinforced by massive utility conservation programs. By 1993, the improvements over 1977 models that annually saved 1,200 kilowatt hours for each household and 15 billion kilowatt hours for the state. That is, states can do something about this by their efficiency, by their policies which lead to efficiency. Well, this is just another interesting thing, because if the trees are one of the sources for taking carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere, insofar as the forests are damaged, the trees are unhealthy and they're not growing, they're not taking as much. So you see here the forest damage that's been caused. People assume by the use of fossil fuels and the sulfurs and nitrogens that come with the use of all fossil fuels. It's just an interesting kind of reality that's part of our world. This is just for Europe. But the fact is that this kind of damage to trees, of course, is again something that doesn't have boundaries. While it would, I don't suppose one would claim that the sulfurs and nitrogen go around the world, they certainly cross boundaries, and that's one of our problems with Canada, is that our northeastern United States is spewing forth these sulfurs and nitrogens. This just shows you it's not a very good. Well, I guess you can get enough out of it. I can't tell the bottom diagram didn't come through. But again, it shows methane, CFCs. That's reversed, actually. But it has other carbon dioxide 49, just shows you the various, and it shows you the sources of the carbon dioxide. 27.5 from industrial, commercial, 31.8 from transportation, utilities 33.4, and residential 7.3. But when you're thinking of a program, you have to think of what kind of a program will be useful with these four segments of our life. Well, what can we do? What can we do? Let me move into what we can do. Passenger cars. It said that if we increase the mileage on our passenger cars by, or on all our cars actually, by 1 mile per gallon, we'd save 7.5 million barrels a year. 7.5 million barrels of oil a year. So that there is a difference in the mileage that cars get. And it's interesting, I've been watching the car ads, and they don't tell you very much about the mileage. They really don't.
I'm free to ask questions?
Sure.
Where we're from, we have the gas called Gasohol. Is that better for the
world? I don't know what Gasohol is made of. Is it made of ethanol or is it made of methanol?
10% ethanol.
10% what?
Ethanol.
Well, ethanol is better than methanol, and I would say that's better if you have 10%. There's less pollution.
But we don't find any out here in the western states.
Well, they're using gas now in some buses in some of the cities in the west. It takes such a big container for the gas that it seems to be efficient for large vehicles, but the French, the Peugeot and Renault just went in with the French government for a $200 million study for hydrogen, use of hydrogen in cars. Italy, Germany has 50 million in research, and Italy 17 million, I think we have about 7 million. It's unbelievable that we aren't. What the proposal is, of course, is that you use photovoltaics in Arizona and New Mexico and produce hydrogen from water. And when hydrogen burns, you get water again. And you've got the problem with hydrogen of exploding and that sort of thing, but I guess we have the same problem with natural gas. So that. In various ways, I really think the price I've seen is 36 cents per kilowatt, per kilowatt, yeah. And that's compared to what, 8 to 14% normally for a kilowatt of electricity from photovoltaics. But I have no doubt in my own mind that if we put the money into it, the technology would develop. And I have no doubt that we'll have cars run by hydrogen. Some people say we ought to go to electric cars, but you've got to produce the electricity to charge your batteries. And how are you producing electricity? If you produce it with fossil fuels, you actually lose efficiency. By 1993, the improvements over 1977 models that annually saved 1,200 kilowatt hours for each household and 15 billion kilowatt hours for the state. That is, states can do something about this by their efficiency, by their policies which lead to efficiency. Well, this is just another interesting thing. Because if the trees are one of the sources for taking carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere, insofar as the forests are damaged, the trees are unhealthy and they're not growing, they're not taking as much. So you see here the forest damage that's been caused, people assume, by the use of fossil fuels and the sulfurs and nitrogens that come with the use of all fossil fuels. Just an interesting kind of reality that's part of our world. This is just for Europe. But the fact is that this kind of damage to trees, of course, is again something that doesn't have boundaries. While it would, I don't suppose one would claim that sulfurs and nitrates and go around the world, they certainly cross boundaries, and that's one of our problems with Canada, is that our northeastern United States is spewing forth these sulfurs and nitrogens. This just shows you it's not a very good, well, I guess you can get enough out of it. I can't tell the bottom line that it didn't come through. But again, it shows methane, CFCs, that's reversed actually. But it has other carbon dioxide 49. It just shows you various, and it shows you the sources of the carbon dioxide. 27.5 from industrial, commercial, 31.8 from transportation. Utilities 33.4 and residential 7.3. But when you're thinking of a program, you have to think of what kind of a program will be useful with these four segments of our life. Well, what can we do? What can we do? Let me move into what we can do. Passenger cars. It said that if we increase the mileage on our passenger cars by 1 mile per gallon, we'd save 7.5 million barrels a year. 7.5 million barrels of oil a year.